Stanger, Mayor.
Sean Stoker, Police Chief.
Jason Folsom, Police Chief.
Mitchell, Recreation.
Aaron Price, Finance Director.
Amy Aaron, Court Administrator slash Deputy Recorder.
Adam Larson, Resident.
Rob.
Genevieve Miller, Rap Tech.
Dave Searle, City Council.
Austin Gray, City Council.
Marie Doherty on City Council.
Dave Jones, Planning Commission.
Dan Evans, Planning Commission.
Everybody knows Lisa keeps us all training on the tracks.
So we're just going to turn the time over to Chris.
That's fine. I think, Lisa, do you still need a minute to set up your recording?
I got the recording started.
Oh, do we have to do another call?
We should, yep.
Yeah, I've got the recording started. So.
You got it started?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you all for joining us on our special work session this evening with the Clinton City Planning Commission and the Clinton City Council. It's being held 2267 North, 1500 West in Clinton, Utah, February 25th, 2025 at 7:09 p.m. I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order, and we'll do a quick roll call both of the Planning Commission and the City Council. I will start.
Dan Evans.
Dave Jones.
Marie Doherty.
Austin Gray.
Dane Searle.
Brandon Stanger.
Chad Hansen.
Mark Gregerson. Spencer Harvey.
Thank you. We'll go ahead now and turn the time over to Solis.
Okay. I already introduced myself. Again, project manager. Two of the other consultant groups as part of this project are WCG and Zion Bank. Jeremy Searle leads the WCG side, and Susie Becker leads the Zion Bank side. Jeremy runs transportation and access management, and Susie will do economics and housing elements, the income housing. Going a little bit further, this is sort of a brief overview of the process that we take or that we're going to go through for this general plan and area plans and code update. First, we start off with the kickoff. There's a slightly better graphic. This is just for simple analysis. This is where we're at, right at the beginning. Go figure. This is our general overview that we take when we go through these processes. We start with a kickoff. We dig deep into the existing conditions so we can understand some of the baseline of what we're looking at with the city and with these area plans and the code. After that, we start to do stakeholder interviews, and this group will be involved in that. We have property owners, and we have interested groups and parties, UDOT and other regional players are all obviously involved in those as well. And so we first reach out to this group and that group to understand what the general vision is for the city, the guidance for the city, what are the goals that want to or need to be established as part of this process, what are the outcomes that you're looking for as part of this process. Once we understand that vision and goals, then we dig a little bit deeper into the existing conditions. As you're looking through that, we'll look through a fairly large range of plans and other things from both the city, the county, and the region as a whole. Then we start to dig a little bit deeper into land use. We'll talk about that a little today. We've already looked at existing conditions. We've looked through the city and seen, okay, this is exactly what the land use is on the ground. And just as a side note, there's a slight difference between land use and zoning. I just want to establish that here. Land use is more general and broad. This is how the land's being used. Zoning actually gets into the specifics of this is what you can do. Hopefully that makes sense. If it doesn't, feel free to ask questions throughout this. I like discussion based. We'll talk about the open space and design. And frankly, just as a side note, as we were digging into the existing general plan, it's one of the most robust open space elements that we've seen in many of the cities we've dealt with, so kudos. The other piece is the multimodal transportation, land use, and then economics and general infrastructure needs, utilities, and those kinds of things for the city. Once we get this, we'll have, and we'll talk a little bit more about public engagement, but we have several events as part of this, and I can send the whole slides as well. I mean, you have them, so. We have several, sorry, I tried to make it as big as possible, but my eyes are a little different. I have terrible eyesight. It's 20/10. It can't get any better. Pretty rough. So I try and squint just to see what some other people may see. But after this, we'll have some public engagement where we get a baseline understanding of what residents would like to see with the city. It's typically found in broad surveys and things like that to really understand the concerns, opportunities, and issues that residents are looking to bring forward. We'll get that in this group, but then we'll also do it with the public just to make sure that there's alignment there. That will be the first public engagement. The second public engagement event, we start to dig a little bit deeper to understand, okay, we need more information in this segment, and that's where we start to do that. And then the final open house typically is, here is what we came away with, give us response, what did we miss, what did we get, and we run from there. And then we'll get a draft, both of the general plan and the code, and the area plans as well. That'll be a portion of that. That's reviewed, and then we go to the general plan, and we'll have presentations to the City Council and Planning Commission for approval. We also touch base with the City Council and Planning Commission, as we're doing today, at periodic segments throughout, just to make sure that we're all on the same page as we move through this process. Any questions there?
What's the missing middle code in that last bullet?
So,
okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So the missing middle code, missing middle is a term used in the planning industry that says, typically, you've got apartments and townhomes and single-family homes. The missing middle is the in-between, like
duplexes, fourplexes,
yeah, the other types of homes that have sort of slipped out of most markets.
And just for clarification, as we went through and refined the scope of work, it was clarified that this may not necessarily end up being a new code, but an update or amendment or expansion of our existing PRD ordinance, or additional elements to that, or, you know, how it's applied. It could be a number of things as we work through the process, but that's the general intent. We already kind of have a missing middle code, because that density range, you know, from duplexes up to townhomes is kind of that thing, that area that Chris is talking about.
Right. Yeah, so that's essentially what it's touching on. And as we go through the process, we'll figure out exactly where that's going to go with the group and the interested parties.
I have one question.
Yeah, just for clarification, this was one of the sections that through WFRC, there was funds there to not only do the general plan, the small area plans, but also focus on this missing middle section also.
Right.
And so what's the general timeline for this whole thing?
We're shooting for a year from March, essentially. And the reason why, we actually typically would finish it sooner, but we're pushing for the year specifically because of what you guys just talked about in the last meeting, the updates. We don't want to give you a general plan that shiny and new, and then the legislative updates come out, and you're like, okay, well, now we have to fix it again. Unfortunately, that's been almost every year, but at least we'll save you a year on that without any modifications or updates that will have to happen. That's why. So approximately that year span.
As far as the steering committee goes, who do you typically recommend be a part of that, and how large of a group is that?
We like to keep the steering committees a little bit tighter. Historically, we've kept one to two planning commissioners, one to two city councilors. Typically, the mayor will sit on that, and then staff, whether it's manager or whoever, planning, engineering. Sometimes we'll have police and fire part of that if there's major concerns, then we'll invite them as well. If not, then we'll just consult you as we go through the process. So that's usually what we look to. We don't like to get too much larger than 10 to 12 people, because the more people, the longer review times take, and most of the time we don't get anything from some of the additional individuals. So, yeah. Any other questions before we jump to the next slide? Okay. This is the process of public engagement. So, very brief overview. We start with stakeholder interviews, and we do this for a very specific purpose, because this helps us to start to understand some of the concerns, issues, and opportunities that exist in the city. We've already been digging in, so we understand a little bit, but you've probably seen the billboards up and down I-15 that say, "We hear you." Like, that's our intent. We want to come in and understand what the city is looking for. That's not a promotion of that billboard company. That's just a use of their slogan.
Good marketing.
Yeah. So we go through this to understand some of that baseline. Then that first engagement event, we like to do our events at city events for a few different reasons. First off, when you don't have food, when you don't have activities, when you don't have things at a city event, this may be a shocker, but people don't show up. Unless they're, excuse my French, this is English, but excuse it anyways, unless they're pissed off, they're not going to show up. And so we like to do this. We'll market these events, we'll advertise these events, and get additional people to understand that, hey, this is happening. But we also get the people that just wouldn't show up anyways to actually give feedback. And we've lowered the barrier for entry on how people can give feedback. We have, as you'll see here, we have visual preference surveys, community design and traditional surveys. We have educational modules, vision boards, and social comment mapping. And I'll talk a little bit about that in about 2 minutes. But we go through a very wide range of different opportunities to allow youth to adults to wide gaps to be able to respond to this across several different languages. And one of the things that we've noticed to be pretty successful is these visual preference surveys, because most of the people say, well, I don't want refuge islands, but when you show them a picture of it, they're like, I want that thing. A refuge island is basically a curved off area that allows children or whoever to cross the street in a safer environment. They don't have to cross the entire street. There's a middle section that allows them to do that. It's not the whole median, it's just a little segment to keep them safer. That's just an example. But we show pictures of what they can do, and they are able to put dots on that, and we can sort of gauge where the interest is with some of the different elements. And we look at transportation, we look at open space, we look at we will be looking at community design. How do you want the communities to look, transition areas, and other things of that nature with those visual preference surveys and community design surveys. And then we also do traditional surveys, which can take anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes. The longer the survey, the less the response. That's just reality. And so we try and keep a lot of these things a little bit less, because we've noticed there's a lot of apathy and just laziness is not the right word, but just less interest or engagement in some of the public when we do some of these things. So we want to make it as easy as possible for people to actually leave feedback. But we also give more of the traditional or long-form surveys to allow people who really do have opinions to give more of their information. So we have a wide range of that. The social comment mapping, we have a website that we'll be setting up for this project that has a map where you can zoom into specific places and do something called geolocate comments. So you can go to the corner of 2000 and 1800 and say, there's a lot of crashes here, please do something to fix it. Or my kids walk across this street and there needs to be a hoxing law, whatever it may be, they can geolocate comments, ideas, images. Keep in mind that we actually have software that looks through these things before it's approved, just to make sure that, you never know. So it will review all that before anything's actually posted. Then it also allows people to comment anonymously or vote up, vote down specific things that they see in that comment software so that we can start to get a dialogue, a non-heated dialogue around some of these things. We also do a vision board that allows people to say, hey, in this area, these are the kinds of pictures, these are the kinds of things that I'd like to see happen. And so we can take that and integrate it with those future plans that come out of these processes. Social media campaign. We also use city outlets, like the city website, social media campaigns, the mayor newsletters, whatever it may be. We capitalize on those utility bills and things of that nature, just so we're trying to reach as wide of a group as possible. I jumped a little bit, but that last event, or the third of those events, will be a future event identified by the city, specifically wherever the city wants to have that event. So we'll have two at city events, which could be Heritage Days, could be whatever, and we'll discuss that and set that up. And then we'll have a third event, which could be at the city hall, could be at the rec center or a park or wherever the city chooses. Any questions with this? One of my favorite things with this, a little background on me, I've done or worked on several referendum projects throughout the state. They happen. I mentioned that. Hopefully it's not too sore of a spot right now because it's still active-ish. The best way for residents to deal with these types of things, unfortunately, a referendum is a tool that residents can use when they don't know how else to do it. It's probably the least successful. And the reason I state that is because when residents come in to referendum a project, what ends up happening is the developer or the group doing the project, instead of talking with them, will do things in spite. It's human nature. So it's actually one of the worst ways to do it. And so we educate residents on the proper approaches or the proper channels on how to actually approach these types of projects, how to work with those developers to get something that works for them and for the developer. Meaning residents and the developer, so that they can come together and create a plan that works for both. Because if you listen to the residents, they'll say things like, I don't want my kids to die. Okay, of course, nobody does. But what's the root behind that? And so we dig into that at these events and other things like that to try and help that education portion of it. Because if residents can understand the process, if they can understand their potential areas of action, it can help facilitate better communication on those types of projects. So there's a little piece to that. And we like to put education. This is a real thing. I won't tell you where, but I was in a community in Utah, and a resident came up to me and said, we want all 5-acre lots, but we also love a Costco. you all laugh, but it's a real thing. And we explained to them, Costco looks for 75,000 residents within a 10-mile radius.
Yeah.
Why? If I give you too many more details about this circumstance, you'll know where it's at. But that community did not have that, and obviously 5-acre lots doesn't get there mathematically. And so we take them through some of that process, and we take them through what changes your taxes, what allows taxes to stay the same, what allows a community continue to thrive. One of the examples I like to use is you all live in a house. If you don't do anything to maintain your house, it falls apart. You have to keep paint jobs up or whatever it may be, little repairs. That's what a city needs as well. there's repairs here, there's things that need to be done in the city. So it's an impossibility to not have any change, because even if you just leave everything alone, it slowly goes downhill. You have to keep it up. And so there's things that have to happen in order to keep the city at current standard. And we talk about those kinds of things at the public engagement. But, sorry, anything else with this? Or are we good to... Okay. The other piece, just general overview. Obviously, the existing general plan was completed in 2013 with subsequent sections being updated per state mandates as far as moderate income housing and some of the other pieces that are needed. We'll be tackling all those things. We'll look through. We'll make sure that it is meeting requirements. But that's the sort of the background of it. First, we get the vision, and then we make sure that, okay, we can use this vision to guide it to still meet those requirements. So we look to facilitate all of those. We understand that Clinton has a pretty long history of traditional development, meaning single-family detached. Simple numbers. We did a little bit of background. There are approximately 7,600 residential homes in the city. Of those 7,600, I believe it's 254 units are attached. The rest are detached single family. So net 97% single family detached and 3% attached. Pretty stark. And I know that that's part history, and I know there's been some interest in maintaining that. Unfortunately, there are some state mandates that have to happen, and if those state mandates don't happen for the moderate income housing, you start to lose state funding for infrastructure, for roads. And that, in turn, affects taxes and a lot of other things. So we try and make sure that that education is understandable for all residents. If this is something that has to happen, let's figure out where it can happen or where it can occur, just to make sure that everyone can be on the same page with that. So that's what we'll be doing. We'll understand the needs and the desires and ideas of residents, and then try and facilitate a way that we can accomplish all those while still getting the state mandates met. In addition to that, there's five sub-elements. I miss hearing that. We did the Riverdale General Plan, and every time we'd have a meeting, I'd be like, yeah. We have five specific sub-elements of every single element that we do, and those are the background of the element. So let's say it's land use. We talk about existing patterns and what's happened in the city over the last little bit. And then we talk about best practices. This is industry standards of what typically happens. Then we pull specific principles from the public engagement. So if someone says, I want a Costco, but I only want 5-acre lots, we go through that and we break it down as to what the math is, what the understanding is behind that, to let people know that that's not a reality. Unless you're a personal billionaire, not a reality, and you want to lose a lot of money on a Costco. The other piece is an educational component, and that's what I was talking about a little bit. So we have these principles that come from the best practices, and then we start to delineate the educational pieces, pro and cons, because every single piece has a pro and a con, whether it's single-family homes, we want more of those, or whatever it may be. And then we do a implementation piece, and then at the very end of all the elements, we'll do a sort of a spreadsheet look, saying here's all of the implementation pieces that come out of this general plan. So you have like essentially a cheat sheet where you can see this is a time frame, this is all the things that we need to do by adopting this general plan. So it'll be in the elements, but then it'll be one sheet with all of that. Got any questions with that?
Okay. So with these 5 points, so every kind of topic, you'll then dig down on each of those topics for those 5 points.
Yeah, and we'll have the actual element. The education and the implementation, there'll be education, and then we say this is what we're proposing, and then here's what needs to happen from that proposal based on what we've heard. So, yeah. Hopefully,
and that's where you're pulling in all the economic data.
Yeah, there's an economic element, and we'll touch on that a little bit, but there'll be an economic element. That integrates with the land use, that integrates with the transportation. There'll be their own elements because that's how they need to be delineated per state code, LUDMA. But yeah, we integrate all those. So that one of the first elements that we'll address is land use. And then you'll also see that there's three specific sub areas or area plans that we'll be addressing, one of which is on the west side. There's some added interest in that one. That's my nice way of saying it. And then there's two others that are predominantly owned by the Church of Jesus Christ or the presiding bishopric that we'll be meeting with them. We'll be meeting with this group and work charrettes on those. What a charrette is essentially we get some of the background, we come up with a concept, we bring it out, and everybody sort of workshops it together. So we'll do that as well. And then there's some specific districts that we'll address in this. And obviously, this is existing land uses that we've delineated throughout the city. We'll do a future land use map that updates based on context and what we've heard. Any questions with this? That was a sort of glossy view.
How much do you consider the surrounding communities, because we're all part of a bigger group here, if we just focus on our city limits?
Yeah, so you're saying there's not a wall there. Yeah, we know.
Yeah, so, you know, west, you know, between 1800 North and Clinton, there's a spot of West Point. So what's going to be there? And so our citizens should be able to make
WCG
recommendations based on a big picture.
Right. WCG was the lead for the West Point General Plan that just completed. So we know that well. We've done work in all the I mean, we did the Layton General Plan, we did the West Point General Plan, so we have a pretty good understanding of what's going on there.
I noticed on the last map, West Point still has a lot of open areas.
Right.
So it would be interesting for our
going
citizens
west.
To know what's the plan for West Point and those farmland areas in the future.
Yeah, you can look at the West Point General Plan. We won't really go in any kind of depth.
Yep.
Integrate with them, but we're not going to go in any depth about what they're doing besides transportation connection point.
Okay.
Sorry.
Really good question. I appreciate that question. And comes to mind that part of the church-owned property extends up into Roy too, doesn't it?
Correct. So yeah, you can see it on the map.
City boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a helpful thing to be mindful of. Yeah.
Is their plan public? So anyone can see it.
West Point? Yeah.
Chris, I was also going to mention, could you briefly describe what the small area plan, and I forget if it's in a later slide, the difference between general plan area and small area plan area level of detail?
Yeah, for sure. So this is a general plan level. This is one of the three area plans. What we do, obviously we get a lot more deep into this, and we start to delineate land use, transportation, active and vehicular transportation modes. We look at connection points, we look at the wetlands and all the existing conditions on site. We look at all of the potential constraints and opportunities with this, and we start to fine tune. You have the ability to use a comb as opposed to like a hair dryer on the whole city. Hopefully that is a really rough analogy that makes sense.
I don't get it.
You wouldn't.
You can't relate.
My brother's bald, but he has a what I like to call a sweater on all the time. So I'm just like, hey, just look at your back. And so, but the point is, this is a lot more intricate, where the general plan is, to the term general, it's a lot more broad in general. We give vision with the general plan. We give guidance, overall guidance, and goals that the community wants. And then those dictate how this body, or these bodies rather, Planning Commission and City Council, make changes or adjustments throughout the city. So it helps to dictate that. Whereas a small area plan, you get into some of the details. You get into that level of, oh, this is how this can look. This is what the entry could look like. And you get a little bit more fine-tuned and specific. As listed here, we'll talk ownership. We talk the vision of this. We'll have precedent images of this is what this community could look like, and we start to dig into that or to dive into that a little bit more specifically. And then we'll have some design elements and other things of that nature in addition to the public engagement for each of these areas. And then an economic forecast and a housing assessment. With area plans, we also have land use modeling involved. Specifically, the smaller the area, the less intensive the modeling, just because if you have a 10,000 acre area, it's basically a small city and you have to include all that. If it's 100 acres, it's not going to necessarily always have a school, whereas a 10,000 will have multiple. 100 acre may or may not. It all depends on what's falling into this, and as you were mentioning, the context surrounding it. So that's where we get a little bit more fine tooth. Does that make sense? Any questions with this? Okay. The other one, and you're going to notice that the text is identical because we're doing the same thing for three area plans. The second one, as was mentioned, part of the area. And we'll be addressing this, but part of the area goes there. So we'll have to, we can't just say, hey, there's the Berlin Wall, we can't go beyond that. We'll have to look at that as a whole. You already have commercial that's in and out of the city, so we have to address those concerns. And so we'll look at all that for this piece. And then the third piece is on the south side. There's an existing church and a few property owners on that west side, but the rest is the presiding bishopric. It is actively farmed. So time frame on this one as opposed to some of the other ones is probably longer out or longer term, whereas the other ones could be more near term. That's not to say that the church, we haven't met with them, so we don't know. That's not to say that they don't potentially have shorter term ideas here.
We did meet with some representatives from PRI and the Land Reserve. It's like 5-10 years fuzzy, maybe, before they start moving
right on to that. So if anything, midterm. Mm-hmm. And we'll be meeting with them first to just get general ideas, and then again to just make sure that the whole group is together and discussing some of that. This may come across as a shocker, but when we talk about some of these small area plans, sometimes a development group or the church or whoever doesn't always want to put all their cards on the table, because you get the city councilor, and that if they let their whole thing open, then they lose leverage. That's just what it is. And so that's why we like to talk a little bit about that, and they're a lot more open, and it still makes it into the plan. Whereas if we start to make it a public thing, then they're like, we don't know. So so there's that. Then moderate income housing. And I know this is just a wonderful thing that everybody loves.
I'm the only one laughing.
Everyone else is too nervous. We have been tracking the development on the west side. We also noticed that, I don't know if you all noticed, but the governor was commending the city for putting in affordable housing. The governor, I don't know if you've been tracking this that much, it's still where it is. I'll just say that. But as a city, at a minimum, there's five specific strategies that you'll have to adopt and implement, and that's where that infrastructure and funding comes into play. Some communities think that just doing the plan is enough. I'll tell you now, that is not correct. You actually have to implement it in order to get continual funding on that. You can't just say, yeah, this is what we're going to plan to do, and then not do it. That being said, the state is not really aggressively tracking it yet, but it seems to be going that way. Just cautionary note that as they continue to get more sophisticated at the state level, who knows where it will go, but most likely we'll have a lot more tracking and teeth to it. Just as a side note, we'll work with the city to update the goals, make sure that they still either update or keep as is if they still are working. The cities that did a lot up front are now finding themselves in a difficult position because every year you have to do something, it seems. So we're on record, so I'm not saying do the bare minimum, but necessarily in some circumstances. And there's reasons to potentially do a little bit more. There's reasons to potentially not do a little bit more. And as we go through the public engagement, we'll figure that out with residents. Because at the end of the day, kids won't be able to afford what you can afford. Just a reality. And if you want to kick them out of the city, that's up to you. But just say. The next piece is transportation and access management. So WCG will be leading this. Zions will be leading the moderate income housing. The WCG has done projects all over Utah, Idaho, active transportation. They work heavily with UDOT. They've done the Farmington, Syracuse, West Point, and UDOT transit plans surrounding the area. They know a lot about the transit coming in and out, meaning vehicular roads and transit and multimodal access points and things. They know a lot about what's going on, so they have a good amount of existing conditions in mind coming into this type of project. Maybe I shouldn't hesitate. So we, SOMAS, we also did the Station Park, and we've done a lot of development around the area as well. So we are pretty well versed in what's going on in some of these areas. And we also know where commercial nodes are beyond what they can do. And so there's really nice synergies that can occur because we know these clients and they can establish other community areas that can help. And so if there's an impetus and if there's the proper measures in line, we can actually help facilitate those relationships and partnerships.
Maybe just one point of clarification, Chris. This is an element of the general plan. It's certainly not meant to replace our overall transportation master plan that GGB has done. It has a whole lot of technical information about, but it'll be, that information will all be integrated into this general plan level type of detail and looking at how transportation to integrate better with land use and open space. So, don't confuse this to be a full-on transportation master plan, because that's not really the intent, but to build upon it.
Right. And again, a general plan is more general in nature. Transportation master plans are done with existing conditions in mind and some proposed conditions in mind. This will integrate a little bit, so there may be some adjustments that need to be made to that transportation master plan that come out of this, but we'll see. But yeah, it's not meant to replace that. It's an element that is a requirement from the state to have as part of the plan. FYI. Any questions with this? Okay. The next piece, I just had to add that because I know it's a recent win. But Zions Bank will look through the city, look at economic opportunities throughout the city. They'll look at different districts and nodes. What's realistic commercial? What's okay but could use some help? So they'll actually look at that and say, here are your major nodes for commercial. Here's what's actually being successful. Here's how much commercial or rather dollars, tax dollars, are being lost, where your leakage is, where you can improve, what potential gaps you have. So they'll look at all of those things and try and integrate that and help with the city to understand, here are our major weaknesses, this is what we can improve on, and these are the measures that have to happen in order to get there in some circumstances. So they'll go through that to try and make sure that you're capturing as much as you can. And again, that turns over to taxes at the end of the day. If you can capture more of that in the city, don't have to charge residents as much. So there's a lot of pros to to that as well, to look at that and see where the gaps are. And we'll also ask residents, like, how much commercial shopping do you do in the city? Is it every day? Do you do all of your shopping here? Do you? And we'll start to get some of that information to delineate the areas where you guys are losing some of that. So yes, it's good to do the spreadsheet stuff. Sorry if you're wearing glasses, but you get the point. You know what it means, yeah. So the point with this is we just want to make sure that whatever those things are, what's on paper and what's perception, because a lot of times for people, perception is reality. And if they're leaving because they don't feel like that thing exists in the city, then maybe it's in marketing, maybe it's in access, maybe it's in signage, and we can try and help adjust that with the land uses to ensure that that stays in the city. And maybe it's wayfinding. There's a lot of different opportunities to capture that in the city. And so we'll go through a lot of those things. And potential funding sources for improvements and other things throughout the city. Any questions with that? Okay. Sustainability and water conservation element. The water conservation element is an element that we've been doing for the last decade. It was, I believe it was 2021 that it was first required as part of a general plan. But we see this as an important piece. Some people may not know this, we live in a desert. It's a reality, and so there are water constraints, there are water concerns, there are water issues. And I think my favorite question that I like to ask, even among planners, and it's a funny response usually among planners because we're all supposed to think about these kinds of things, but I ask, how many of you have a front lawn? How many of you water your front lawn? When's the last time you touched your front lawn besides mowing it? And these are the kinds of things that we can look at to try and eliminate potential waste. And that's what that requirement is from the state. What are the land uses? How do they improve water consumption or decrease water consumption in the city? Look at those types of things and make sure that we work with the DNR to find ways that work for the DNR but still accomplish the city's goals. Make sense? Okay. If you couldn't tell by now, I'm a fairly sarcastic person, hopefully. And it's dry, too, so you may not understand it at first.
Go with the desert.
Yeah. There you go. Hey, so that's it. That's essentially the general plan in a nutshell. We'll be going through all these things, and there'll be a few other elements that come in as part of this as well.
Question. Regarding the water element, I have no memory because I'm getting old. But what was the date? What was the date? There, it seems the legislature placed a date on when you were required to have that element added to your general plan by like a certain date.
December 2025.
I was going to say, I could have sworn it was 2025. So then to be in compliance with them, do we have to just like get that into our current plan?
No.
Okay.
There's a leeway and sort of this grace period that if you're actively working on that, they can grant extensions if need be, especially if we're looking at the next year. But you don't also have to have, like, this is our general plan element by it, like, as part of the general plan, and it has to wait until the rest of the general plan. We can get that one segment out, but they've already been really gracious on that with other communities, so I don't see that as being an issue.
Sure. So who is that you're talking about
being DNR. Gracious?
DNR, okay.
So, Resources. Right, Division of Natural Resources for Utah. They're the governing body. Maybe I shouldn't say this again, but like the moderate income housing, there's not a lot of teeth to it yet. The DNR, as we have met with them on several water elements, they're pretty loose, so long as you cover X, Y, and Z. They're not like, there's no checklist that they have. They just say, hey, these are the general things that you need to cover, and this is how we've seen it done. So they're pretty loose with that, too.
I do understand the water plan, speaking of Rick Webster, vision, that they do want to see the future land use and then a forecast of the indoor and outdoor water.
Right.
And that could be done comparing a few alternatives too, right?
Yeah, modeling on that requires, if you're looking at city scale and you're doing three different options, modeling that is a decent lift. We typically like to do one model off of it based on what the city's proposed land use plan is, so that we can actually say, here's the existing land uses, this is how the consumption, water consumption would change, here's water savings, and so we model indoor and outdoor. Frankly, indoors is pretty much the same. So if you have a 2,500 square foot townhome or 2,500 square foot single family detached, they're almost identical indoor water use, because it's typically based on like your faucets and things of that nature. Like, you could have 50 bedrooms in a house, but it doesn't really move the needle besides the fact that you probably have a ton of people in that house, and so they're showering a lot more frequently. But faucet use is essentially identical for the varying size of housing. Outdoor water use, on the other hand, is drastically different. Irrigation is by far one of the most notorious users of water.
There you go.
That's the nice way to put it. And like I said before, how many people have a front lawn and they water it and things? So, yeah. There's simple things that could be done by ordinance, by incentive programs. A lot of the water districts will actually have incentive programs that maybe you've heard of, like the Flip My Strip or some of those other ones that could be implemented and help to reduce water consumption. Also, for commercial developments where there's really little to no use in some cases for their lawn areas, to shift those away from that so you can have water savings there helps as well. Any other questions with that or anything that we've addressed today?
I thought it was interesting that your information gathering process, that you have various means that you do, that people can do the georeferencing, they can take a survey that's shallow or deep, but that seems helpful to do that. Your comments about maybe helping people think about, if you have this, it's harder to have this, et cetera.
Right.
That's interesting. That seems like an important part of this, all of that, this information gathering process, because we have different voices in the city, and it is difficult. You know, we hear the loudest voices, and it's I think important to have a deeper view of what everyone wants as we work through this.
Right, and that's also why we've lowered the barrier, because younger children and youth and teenagers, I mean, sure, they don't pay taxes or anything today, but for too long they will be. And so this is a 10-year to 20-year plan. They're going to be paying taxes then. They should have a say.
And we hear voices on both sides, and both sides have valid points of view. And you know, where are the situations where we can do win-win? Where are the et cetera, et cetera.
Win-win's obviously the best possible outcome. Sometimes it's a mostly win-win.
Least objectionable.
Yeah.
I think as you go through this process, I've seen cities on either side where it's heavily directed by citizen input, and the decisions are made, you know, well, let's ask the citizens and we'll just put in what they want, right? And then I've seen communities that will say, well, we'll do the survey, but then we'll just do whatever we want, right? I think the idea is obviously to merge those two the best that we can, but there's going to be elements as a city council and as a planning commission that we have to, you know, we were positioned a little bit higher and we get to look further down the road, and we're going to make some more difficult decisions in that aspect, trying to be thought leaders and trying to be proactive on the challenges that we see from our consultants, and they'll point those out. And I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, it is your plan, right? And we want to make sure that it works for our residents, but we also have that opportunity to look a little bit farther. And so there's going to be chances to have those difficult conversations through it. But as we look at our roles of being, you know, trustees of the local government of the city, and making those educated, complicated decisions that that the layperson doesn't quite fully understand the full picture. That's you're going to have that opportunity. So I just want to get you ready for that because it's
kind
coming.
Kind of like the difference between a pure democracy versus a republic.
Right, right. We're going to seek all that input, and then we need to use expert opinions in conjunction with citizen input, and how do we make the best of that situation.
Correct. And I'm sure this has never happened. You've never had a resident come to a city council meeting and say, this is what I want, and in the back of your head you're like, there's no way in anything that that's actually feasible or logical. It's probably never happened. I get it. But that's where the education comes in. Like, sometimes residents want something that's literally impossible to do, unless you want to go bankrupt as a city. So that's where that merge between the two comes into play. We want to make sure that we can accomplish as many of the goals and the vision pieces as possible, but still stay in a realistic framework. At the end of the day, this is something that you need to be able to implement. And if it's not implementable, why do it?
I think that's important to remember down, like, throughout the whole process too. Is we can, it's important to get their input, but then also educate them as much as we can. You know, not necessarily changing their mind, but at least being, you know, like, this is why it needs to be this way. When it is that kind of middle, best case or least objectionable. But
thanks for saying that. But it's education and it's marketing.
Yeah,
because
100%.
And I would say, don't give them the world of options and then come back and tell them, no, we can't do it. So try to limit the options to things that are feasible, so that there's as few, you know, declinations as possible. And then the other thing is, and just because, you know, I'll state again that at least of the 4,000 people that signed our referendum, it's not an anti-townhome referendum. It's a concern about rapid population growth. So you don't need to tiptoe around higher density housing or moderate income housing or anything like that. We're getting a bunch of it here, and we're going to get more of it, and that's fine. But we have to make sure the citizens know what's being required and why we think we should do a little more than that, or why we're going to stay at the minimum, or why we think we should blow that out of the water because everybody wants a Costco, so we need to add rooftops, you know? If that's what the people say, then great. The other thing I'll say is that after having spoken to a lot of people, I would not say that we're using the same people that did West Point and Syracuse because they're, Clinton residents are not huge fans of what they're seeing in our neighboring towns. And so if it, from a marketing perspective, I would say that's not something to hold up as an example. So just take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
I think I don't have any doubt that the plan was done superbly, you know, but
it's based on residents. So if they don't want what you want, that's on them.
Well, it wasn't. Yeah. But to the point we're just discussing, it wasn't all based on residents, right?
Yeah, there's educational pieces in that.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else before we adjourn? Okay, second. All in favor?
I'm council. Council's by voting.
Thank you all for coming tonight.